listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio, proudly brought to you by D-Link. I can't help to think back to when Telstra was run by the three amigos, one of which was Phil Burgess. Remember him? He was the controversial bull terrier of the organisation, who had the role of Group Managing Director of Public Policy and Communications. He had an uncanny ability to get most people offside as he spruiked the then Telstra policy of command and conquer. But that's history now. When Phil decided to move on, in his parting speech, he made mention of how bad the mobile phone services were in the United States compared to that of Australia. At the time, I didn't realise just how bad things could be in the US until I experienced the American cell phone network firsthand in the last 2 weeks. I chose AT&T as a carrier of choice because I wanted to give Apple's iPhone a run for its money in its home network. Having purchased a prepaid mobile service and SIM, which was easy to get going, I was annoyed that the SIM was locked to the device. Unlike here in Australia, where SIMs can be swapped between devices, it isn't possible on the AT&T plan I was on in the United States. There's also no such thing as roaming onto another network like we do here either. If AT&T didn't have the coverage, then I didn't either. Call drops were quite common and in places where you would expect blanket coverage, such as Palo Alto in Silicon Valley, California. It paid to remain stationary while on the phone. In another bizarre twist, it's impossible to buy prepaid mobile data in the US, while postpaid isn't a problem. If you need mobile broadband, you need to commit to a contract. Not very practical for the tourist like me. Having spent some time chatting to the phone specialist at Best Buy, I came to the realisation that I wasn't going to be able to use the iPhone in the land of the free. But here's the twist. I had my Telstra SIM in my iPhone, and the phone signed on to the AT&T network without a hitch. And surprise, surprise, when there was no AT&T coverage, the iPhone logged on to T-Mobile. How cool! My iPhone, with a Telstra SIM, could do what no other US cell phone could do, switch between networks as coverage dictated. So maybe the last laugh is on the three amigos. With their Telstra SIM, I'm sure they have the best coverage in the United States.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner takes a look at the new video on demand offerings in Australia and how you can benefit. McAfee admits inadequate quality control caused a PC meltdown. Android now runs on an iPhone and Adobe hits back at Apple over Flash. First up though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Google releases censorship data. Facebook announces new tools for web developers. A McAfee security update causes cash register chaos. And the Hubble Telescope celebrates its 20th birthday. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Google has released a list of countries which have requested personal user data or have asked for information to be censored. Google says that releasing the information will provide increased transparency and give people an insight into government actions and web freedom. Top of the list is Brazil, followed by Germany and then the United States, while Australia ranked number 10 with 17 data removal requests and 155 requests for user information. Statistics for user requests or data removal from China have not been published. Mr. Geordie Guy from internet lobby group Electronic Frontiers Australia spoke on the ABC's PM program about the number of requests made by Australian governments and law enforcement agencies.
As it stands at the moment, though, companies like Google and obviously their service YouTube are fairly good at self-regulating. They don't regulate to quite the extent the Australian government would like. They tend to only ever really regulate material that's illegal or patently offensive, whereas our classification guidelines tend to try and cast a wider net.
Google said that it hoped the list would be helpful in discussions about the appropriate scope and authority of government requests, and said that the search giant hoped that other companies would make similar disclosures. Of the 17 removal requests made by the Australian government or law enforcement agencies, 9 requests were partially or fully complied with. One or more of these 9 requests included the removal of 14 YouTube videos. Google explained that some requests pertain to multiple pieces of content, or multiple requests could pertain to the same piece of content. Google also explained that the data does not include government requests for removal of copyrighted content or for the removal of pornography, which Google says it censors on its own. Google has published an interactive world map which shows requests for data or censorship between the 1st of July and the 31st of December last year. This map can be viewed at www.google.com/government-requests. Social network Facebook has made no secret of its plans to tackle Google head-on and become tightly integrated with the World Wide Web. Facebook founder Mr. Mark Zuckerberg said at the F8 conference in San Francisco last week that it was releasing a number of development tools that aimed at putting users and their friends at the center of the web. BBC News reports that the most significant new tool is an open graph protocol to let publishers tag their content by type, along with a like button that partner websites can include on their web page. This button will allow users to indicate what they like on a website, photographs, news items, music, or any other content. The information will then be stored by Facebook in the same way it already stores connections between people. At the same time, any website will be able to take individual preferences and use them to tailor what Facebook describes as a more personalized online experience for the user and their friends. Facebook says that this means its members will see a web that caters to their individual tastes. Industry analysts have described the announcement as impressive, audacious, and even a bit scary. Some have raised privacy issues, criticizing Google for not being more specific as to how consumers will have more control over the things they do on the web. Mr. Zuckerberg was addressing an audience of about 1,500 developers at F8, a conference designed to bring developers and entrepreneurs together building the social web. An antivirus update caused chaos for Australian computer users last week. The update from popular antivirus software vendor McAfee apparently confused a valid Windows system file with a virus and caused PCs to continually reboot. The antivirus patch upset retail operations for Coles stores, Virgin Mobile outlets, as well as universities, hospitals, and other businesses. A spokesman for Coles said that a large number of cash registers were affected and that a number of stores had to be closed because of the faulty patch. McAfee said the software glitch affected corporate users of Microsoft's Windows XP Service Pack 3 and released another update later in the day, which fixed the problem. And the world's most famous space telescope, Hubble, is celebrating its 20th birthday. NASA's first orbiting space telescope has revolutionized human understanding of the universe and was launched from the Space Shuttle Discovery on the 24th of April, 1990. Hubble orbits 570 kilometers above the Earth and has photographed more than 30,000 celestial objects with images 10 times clearer than those from the most powerful Earth-based telescopes. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The Do Not Call register is about to expire.
Oh, did you re-register?
Oh. I
did.
No, I haven't yet.
Has your date of birth changed? That sort of stuff.
It sort of really wasn't a good time in Sony's history, was it?
That seems a bit short-sighted of them, Graham.
It's not as dumb as having no keyboard at all and having to balance it on your knee with Velcro while you type on the virtual keyboard on the screen.
Yeah. It comprises augmented reality to navigate.
Argumentative reality.
I have that on my phone. Don't you worry about that. Have you seen them?
I've seen the YouTube videos, yeah.
Some of these older technologies, like email and like the DNS, didn't quite have the security that they needed.
Wow. Is all I can say on that one? Wow.
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge, perhaps, to the commercial operators to do the same thing.
Perhaps there's a good tech show they might like to take.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but if they can't find a good tech show, then refer them to us.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm back. Did I miss anything? Hello, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb with the cold that you get, the ubiquitous cold as you travel one side of the world to the other.
It's the obligatory time zone change cold, isn't it, that everybody seems to get?
Yeah. Yes. Well, getting onto an aircraft and having filtered air pumped through the cabin and all that sort of stuff. So
rebreathing your own air and
that's the one.
Bodily gases and everybody else's for 24 hours. It's great.
Bodily gases?
Well, everything is self-contained in the aircraft, isn't it? Nothing gets in and nothing goes out.
Hey, I flew in an A380 for the very first time in the course of last week.
Did you get lost?
No. It's like a hotel. You sit on the runway and you wait for these things. You go, this is never going to get off the ground. And sure enough, you then realise, oh, that's why they extended the runway at Melbourne Airport and Sydney Airport and all that sort of stuff, so the thing can actually get off the ground. But once it does get off the ground, she's as quiet as a mouse and she, yeah, good stuff. Anyway, what did I miss? What happened?
What did you miss?
Yeah.
What did we miss? We're waiting on all the war stories and all the goss. I've spoken to you a few times and since you've been back and you've said, wait for Monday night. Then you've brought in a brand new Apple, what is it? Electronic photo frame thing.
That's right. The new Apple electronic photo frame, as Dr. Ron calls it. I'm holding it up to the camera at the moment.
And you're logged into the chat room.
It's funny. Yeah, I know. I'm using the chat on it. It's amazing what you can do on this photo frame. It's pretty good. Oh, look, hang on. The back it says iPad. Did you know?
I'll hold it around
to the right way. There you go.
It's one of those things you said you were not going to buy. Is that right?
That's right. And I did end up buying it because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time and I had my credit card out and the man said, would you like one? I go, all right.
And what happened at customs? You got accosted by the customs people saying, oh, what the hell's this?
On the way back into Australia. Yeah. Yes, that's another story. But
what happened?
I came back into Australia and you're only allowed to bring $900 in and I brought a bit more than $900 back in and I did the right thing and declared it. And this lovely girl at customs in Melbourne Airport said, why, how much over your limit are you? And I said, oh, just a couple hundred bucks. She said, what did you buy that pushed you over your limit? And I said, oh, I got one of these iPad thingies. And she's gone, what's an iPad? She said, no, excuse me, no, show me, that's my coal at work there, so I'll be very croaky tonight. Anyway, I had to get it out of the bag and show, and she goes, oh, that's pretty cool, isn't it? Okay, off you go. Thanks for declaring it.
Oh, that was it.
And that was it. I thought, here's a prime case for a seizure at customs. But it wasn't to be, so anyway.
No, they didn't make you pay GST on it or anything like that?
No.
That's good.
No.
So when are you on border security on Channel 7? Is that
funny you should mention that. A particular person near and dear to the Tech Talk radio show, if you go back about 3 or 4 years, do you remember when David Rose was on the show?
I do remember David Rose.
David Rose actually shoots border security, and as I walked back in through Melbourne's customs, I saw the signs up saying, if you don't want to be videotaped, please tell the camera crew. And I've gone, oh, that's nothing like a red rag to a bull, especially when you know the camera operators and stuff like that. But no, unfortunately, he was nowhere to be seen. I think they'd been out chasing puppy dogs or something across suitcases at the time. But anyway, hi, David, if you're listening. So yeah, that was my border security thing. But the new electronic passports, they're great. It speeds up the process getting to your bag. They've got to work on the next thing down the line of getting out of customs, which is getting the things off the baggage off the plane and onto the hurdy-gurdy where you collect, because you spend hours waiting for that.
Now, the new Australian passports, they've got a special electronic chip in them, don't they?
They do.
So they can be scanned very quickly and they can hold a lot of information.
Oh, so Mossad can actually steal all your passport details without even actually making contact with your passport.
They don't actually need to physically have
copy the chip out of your pocket.
They do actually have to have contact with your passport because it's a dual process that you go through. You have to zing it through and you get a ticket. Then you go and you have your photo taken and then the photo matches up all the others. Stuff. So.
Okay.
But it does. It took all of literally about 2 minutes to walk through immigrations and about an hour and a half to get through customs. So they've just got to work on the back end. But yeah, credit to them. They're doing a good job out there. So, but yeah, the electronic passports, I think getting into the United States these days, you need to have an electronic passport. Otherwise, the visa that you don't need to have that you have to apply for, you can't get. So
if I want to go to the United States for a couple of weeks as a visitor and trip around and then fly home, do I need a visa?
Yes and no.
Oh, okay. I thought that was going to be the complicated answer.
Yes, you have to apply to not have a visa.
Yeah, I thought that was the case.
Now, if that everyone's gone, what? What did he say? Yes, you have to apply not to have a visa. Now, it's pretty easy. You just jump on the Department of Homeland Security and you put your passport number in and you say where you're going and all that sort of stuff. And it says, yep, no worries, you're approved. And then when you get there, you've got to do it. If you don't do it,
you've got to tell them you're coming, basically.
Correct. Yeah. So long as they know you're coming and to expect you, They're fine. But if you lob up unexpectedly, they'll send you home. So, but no, it was very good. And I flew in one of the brand new Qantas A380 Airbuses from Los Angeles back to Melbourne, which was quite an experience. Talk about spatial aircraft. These things are amazing. And the thing which, from a technological point of view, apart from the fact that they do fly just as fast as the 747s, the 747s feel like the Ventura bus going up and down the local street here, whereas the A380 feels a bit more like a palatial hotel when you get into it. They're very, very nice. And I was flying down the back. I was in the cattle class in the green seats. But having said that, if you are lucky enough to travel on one of these magnificent aircrafts and it does get off the ground, underneath your seat, you have 240 volts with a regular power point. Every seat has 240 cool. volts underneath the seat.
Fantastic.
And in the armrests, you have 5 volts on your USB port, which is pretty impressive. So you can plug your iPad in and charge it. You can put your phone in there or whatever, anything that powers off a USB device.
Yeah, that would be really handy because my Nokia E51, thanks very much for this, Nokia, it's got a USB connector on the bottom of it, perfectly stock standard USB connector that can take 5 volts in. And it won't use it. It won't charge from it. You have to plug in the Nokia power plug into it.
Just for data.
Yeah.
Right.
Thanks, Nokia.
There's a lesson.
Good design there.
Well, no, you can take your Nokia charger and plug it in the 240 volts under the seat.
Yeah, that's what I have to do, yeah.
Just so I charge that, Graham, with the little USB port.
Yeah, with the USB port. Yeah, very good. That's on your HTC.
On the HTC. Yes.
Nokia. Yeah.
There's another interesting bit of...
That's really good with the power options in the seat. That's great. And is there room in... How much room is there in the seats in the...
Oh, they're good.
Because you're not a small person. You're not as big as me, but you're not a small person.
No, but there's room to move. And I must admit, I did the upgrade to get the extra leg room, and we could have kicked the footy up the front where I was.
Oh, fantastic.
It's pretty amazing. And one of the other bits of technological news in the new A380 Airbuses for Qantas in particular, just above the USB port in the armchair is a Cat 5 port.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I saw that. I said, what's Cat 5 called? I was sort of gesturing to the flight attendants as I was going down. I found one that was pretty well switched on.
Now, this is like a network port that we plug a blue cable into.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I've gone, that's really interesting. Why have they got Cat 5 into every arm seat of an A380?
That sounds very sensible to me. I'm waiting to see what they're doing with it.
Anyway, I got a very much an off the record sort of response. I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, tonight we've got some... what was the off-the-record response?
The off-the-record. Everyone out there, you didn't hear this from me. You didn't hear this from me. But I sort of said, that'd be a good way to get internet around, wouldn't it? And they've gone, yes. And I've gone, you're going to bring internet through a Cat 5 into the A380, aren't you? Maybe. And then without much more solicitation than that, the actual flight attendant mentioned Australian government, Stephen Conroy, and internet in one word. In one sentence, I mean. And I thought, aha, say no more. So reading between the lines, the reason why we don't have internet in A380s is regulatory issues.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
So there you go. It's cabled and it's probably, they've just got to flick the switch.
Yep.
Not that they told me that. I'm reading between the lines.
Satellite. Up and down from the top of the plane.
In a very modern aircraft, which has got everything that opens and shuts. And by the way, it's got webcam in the actual aircraft too. So you can actually tune in. Everything's on demand. It's not like the old days. But you can actually see the image from the back of the aircraft, from the tail. Yeah. So as you take off, it's a very interesting view on your monitor as this thing lumbers down the airport and takes off.
Now, when Qantas had the tyres blow out on one of their aircraft a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it wasn't mine, fortunately. No, I did tweet that I was tweeting when I was there. I said, look, one just landed. And
we're glad that you weren't involved in that incident. But someone was holding their iPhone or their mobile phone up to the screen in the back of the seat in front of them as they were landing, like saying, look, Mum, look, I'm landing the plane, I'm recording this. And suddenly, bang, there's sparks and flames and smoke and stuff coming out from the aircraft. And it's up on YouTube, I think. It would have been quite scary for the people watching it. But now, can I read between the lines where you're reading between the lines?
Oh, this is getting complex.
Does this mean that, are they worried? Is the Australian government worried about people, dialing up, porn sites or something while you're sitting on the plane and the passengers beside them being offended or, breaking some sort of classification problems?
I just think Conroy can't get his internet filter up to 40,000 feet. He's got a technical limitation there. So maybe you're right.
That's bizarre. I wonder if Qantas would be able to turn on internet access, like high-speed internet access, like after they left Australian airspace or
that's
something,
right.
where they're no
when
longer...
across the border, it doesn't matter. Yeah,
but that might be the problem. It might be that Qantas are wanting to clarify what the regulations are going to be in... You know, whether they're going to be different in Australia as compared with over international waters as compared with where they land.
Mm.
And it might be that it's just very complex for them to work out what their legal situation is if someone, you know, if someone does look at something inappropriate or upload something or...
And they make it... Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. Someone makes a complaint.
That's
and
right,
what,
yeah.
What liability does Qantas have?
That's, I would imagine, would be more the sort of thing we're talking about.
Mm. I hope they can sort it out because that would be fantastic. Mm. Having high-speed broadband to the seat in the plane would be great.
Funny you should mention that. I flew Virgin America from San Francisco to Las Vegas.
Now, those guys do have internet turned on.
Correct,
in
they
the
do.
Planes. Yeah.
And if you saw my tweet, which said, it's amazing what you can do at 40,000 feet in the air. You saw a picture out the window
I
of the aircraft.
You twit-picked mm. from inside the plane. Yeah, it was very impressive.
You can go and have a look at that. It's still there, or should still be there on TwitPic. But yes, we tried a few Skype calls, but unfortunately, due to the time difference, I managed to wake the family up and no one wanted to speak to me. So, I was going to ring a few other people, but I thought, no, I better not, because it was about, I think, 5 in the morning or something like that when I made a Skype call from 40,000 feet. So
I spoke to you a couple of times on Skype when you were sitting down for breakfast at 9 a.m. at your local time.
Yes, I'm still sort of a bit Skype somewhere between here and there, too, when it comes to time zones. I'm not
Skype
quite there
from
yet.
A plane, though, might be a different issue, of course, because if you're using satellite for your internet, you've got a very long lag time. So... because of the distance that the signal has to travel up to the satellite, which is geostationary orbit, which is a long way up, and then all the way back down to Earth again. And it's got to do that again on the return leg. So Skype, there could be very long delays. You could say something and the other person could hear it 3, 4, 5 seconds later.
Yes, you're right.
So much worse than if you were using a normal internet connection on the ground in America trying to talk to Australia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd
because
yes.
those signals go the short way around the bottom of the sea rather than through, you know, geostationary orbit.
No, valid points. But congratulations to Virgin America. If anyone is traveling and wants to play tech on an aircraft, Virgin America is the only airline to fly. I don't have shares in them. It's not a political statement. It's just a lot of fun. Mm. It costs you $7 US to do it. And it lasts, you can buy a week, a month pass, and, you know, they encourage you to buy a month pass. So if you've got friends traveling, buy the month pass and then give them your password and stuff like that.
So if you are a frequent flyer and you make, you know, say one or two trips a month or a week between major cities in the United States, then you can use your credit on your card, can you, to access
yeah, you
the
just
internet.
You just buy a month pass. I think it's $14.95 US for a whole month of flying.
What a great idea.
So every time you get on aircraft, you've got your new username and password and you've got internet access, whether you're flying from Los Angeles to New York or wherever it is like that, you've just got, you know, 6 hours to kill on a flight. There's no better way than doing it than surfing the net and annoying your friends on Twitter.
And is that provided to you inside the aircraft via Wi-Fi?
Yeah, you just turn on your computer, your laptop, and...
Finds the hotspot in the plane.
It finds the hotspot. So, yeah, whether using the iPhone, you might have to browse to it and connect to it. And then once you've done that, you open up a web browser. It says, g'day, welcome to Go whatever it is. And if you'd like to use this service... Just give us your credit card details, which, you know, tick, 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 easy done. And then next thing you know, you're surfing the net, checking your email, doing Skype, waking the family up, sending silly twit pics from 40,000 feet.
I like it.
Which is very impressive out the side of the window, I thought. So, yeah, anyway. So that was probably the height of the aviation communications. Let me tell you, the actual internet works a damn sight better at 40,000 feet than it does in ground level in the United States. the one thing I did notice difference is that in Australia in particular, we rely on, 3G or, you know, mobile telephone broadband, whereas in the US it's very much dependent on hotspots and Wi-Fi because they're absolutely everywhere. You go into McCarran Airport or something like that in Vegas and it's all there. It's free, it's relatively high speed, so you end up connecting to each and every hotspot that you can find, and obviously there are issues with that when it comes to security and the likes, but we ended up, I tried very hard to use my iPhone on the American telephone network, which was the plan. I bought an AT&T device and a SIM card, but over there they lock their service, or they lock the SIM card to an IMEI number, which means you can't change your phone, which I thought was a little bit disappointing. Now, that was my experience. I can't tell you whether that's right across the board, but that was also with a prepaid.
I was going to say prepaid, they're locking it to an IMEI.
It locks to an IMEI number, which means the handset that you nominate is the handset that you... end up using. So in hindsight, which is a wonderful thing, I should have given them the IMEI number of my
iPhone
when I went over there. So I think GD, our moderator, has he will be... That's one of the damn... The iPhone, the iPad, it just locks... Sorry, I was on the chat there. But the
bangs you heard was Andrew hitting his touchscreen with his fingers trying to get it to do something.
Yeah, that's right. It's come back now.
Smashing it.
T.A. Wisek. G'day, Matthew. You're in town at the moment.
Yeah, T.A. Wisek.
They'll hold it up to the camera there. But that was my experience in a lot of respects on the ground over there, that if you want mobile data, like we would have NextG or 3 or Optus or any of those carriers, and you hook in and use that, then you really need to be postpaid over there, not prepaid.
Now, but almost all of the main carriers here are using 3G technology for most of their networks. They're using HSDPA for their data. Whereas over there, there's still a lot of 2G networks around, aren't there? So there's a lot of CDMA or GSM or whatever.
Yep. I ended up walking around with the Verizon hotspot in my back pocket wherever I went, and I actually used the Wi-Fi from that. So it's like a standalone, self-contained wireless hotspot.
Yeah. So it must have been getting data through the phone network somehow.
It was. But it was fairly slow data. So whether it was GPRS or whether it was up on 3G or what, I'm not sure. Mm. It was just a little black box with a power lead, and you turned it on and you connected into a Wi-Fi thing and wandered around the place. So, but having said that, the Wi-Fi is absolutely everywhere. When I was in California up around Palo Alto with Lid, who you've heard on this show on regular occasions, Mountain View is just, there's Wi-Fi everywhere on all the traffic poles around the just wherever you are.
Who provides
Mountain View
that though?
Google do, free of charge.
Google set it up.
So all throughout Mountain View, there's free Wi-Fi, which is just fantastic. So you log in using your Gmail account and off you go.
Is that peculiar to Silicon Valley? Or
yes.
Is that they don't set up in cities all around the place, no?
No. That's just in the rough areas of the Googleplex, which, may I say, is a credit to them. It's the most amazing establishment you've ever seen or been inside. And can I say that their lawns and their gardens are manicured to within an inch of their life? But I did find out from the locals that they have what they call mow and blow guys over there.
Yeah.
And
mow and blow.
They call them mow and blows. We would call them here something
Jim's
like
mowing.
Jim's mowing. But they call them mow and blows over there. And what they are is, as you're probably aware, there are Mexicans over there. And the Mexicans do a lot of manual labor, which is what, I guess, more skilled labor wouldn't do. So the Mexicans come up, and the way you solicit a Mexican over there, you go down to a local sort of area and you say, I need someone to do my lawns, I need someone to clean my gutters, I need someone to do whatever, and you bring them back with you. It's not as if you ring up and say, hi, Jim, can you send someone around to fix my TV antenna? You've got to go and get them. And anyway, these mow and blow guys come and they're just in their little vans and they do just that. They out with their little whippersnipper and their little vac blower thing.
They
and
mow the lawns, they blow the leaves away and that's
absolutely
it.
Absolutely. Anyway, so that was one of the interesting parts of it. But Wi-Fi, absolutely everywhere, at all the airports, in all the casinos, all that sort of, absolutely everywhere. So anyway, and we haven't even spoken about what I saw over there yet, which was just absolutely mind-blowing in the technological side of things. But, Dr. Ron, you said there was some Coro.
There is.
This whole show is not about my American trip. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
We'd love to have a show all about your American trip.
Oh, no.
We've got to have a slide night yet.
Yeah, right. I will put some pictures
up
on the website.
We're going to get the family and crouch around, huddle around the iPad. And
TARDIS 3 is just querying Mow and Blow. Yeah, that's right. TARDIS.
I've clarified it
for
you.
Oh, good. I'm
Mow and Blow.
Yeah.
Yes, if you want to talk to us live while you're listening to the program, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. If you're not listening live, that's okay as well. Go to forum.
So just briefly, because I've been out of the country for 2 weeks, seriously, what's happened in the last 2 weeks?
What's happened in the last 2 weeks?
Has Stephen Conroy done anything silly?
No. not any sillier than we were last year. There's a big volcano erupted in Iceland.
Yeah, I know. I was caught the back end of that.
Yeah. Graham, the name of the volcano was...
is unpronounceable.
It is indeed unpronounceable. We had a challenge there, but I think we had a bit of a crack last week on the air, but
we had a crack, but I actually heard someone pronounce it correctly. It was nothing
wasn't
like
anything
it.
Like what I said, was it? No.
It's very funny. The 2 shows ago, we had Anthony Caruana join us, who's a special guest from Macworld.
Yep.
And he was telling us all about the iPad, and Adam brought in his new iPad, which he had FedExed.
Which we think was the first in Australia?
One of the first.
It was very funny. As I was leaving the country, I was watching him tweet standing out the front of his place going, this is the slowest FedEx truck in history.
Yes, yes. We spoke about Lyd's practical jokes and how we nearly cancelled his order and you nearly changed your flights and everything
yeah,
else. Did
good.
You give a curry about that? Like, she nearly upset a lot of people's plans.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And last week we had Matthew Robinson on the program.
Ah, and he's back in the country from Denmark.
He's here from Denmark for a short time. He's in the chat room tonight.
He's probably been laughing about what I've been saying about stuff in the United States.
He will have been laughing. He told us that he was surprised at how slow our mobile network broadband is here. He gets between anywhere between 2 and 10 megabits per second
Matthew,
on the 3 network in Denmark.
Don't go to the United States, Matthew.
It's worse, isn't it? We're somewhere in the middle then. The other thing I forgot to ask Matthew last week, which maybe you can come up in the chat room and tell us, is I suspect they don't, but do you have to pay to receive telephone calls in Denmark? I'm guessing no, but in the United States you still do.
Oh, every time you sent me a text, it cost me 20 cents.
You said you got two texts. You got the text that I sent you, and then you got another a balance update text saying we've deducted another 25 cents from
your account. There's nothing as such as a free lunch over there, let me tell you.
Wow.
Every time your phone comes to life, you're charged for it. They ping, off it goes.
That's crazy.
But can I also say too, with the mobile phone coverage over there,
yes,
I alluded to in the opening of the show, and I'll just touch on it briefly again, is the fact that you don't roam over there. If you're on AT&T, you're stuck to AT&T. Well, this is my findings anyway. Same with if you choose T-Mobile, whatever the company is over there. But having said that, I did have my Telstra SIM in my iPhone and I turned it on and I could roam across all three networks. So I reckon the three amigos had the last laugh. They set up, obviously, roaming agreements with all the American choice, yeah, all the American ISPs over there. So at least when they went back with their Telstra SIM, which is obviously they'll never pay for again, they just roam everywhere they go. And it just works.
That's rather clever. They've done well, haven't they?
Yeah, see, yeah. They're not as silly as
That's one of the advantages we get from having a strong telecommunications regulator, because it's the regulatory environment in Australia that makes sure that they have agreements between the networks so that you don't have to get charged for incoming calls from other networks, you don't have to get charged for incoming SMSs, and you don't have to get charged, or you don't have problems when you roam from network to network.
Well, that's true. And also, they do have a lot of spectrum issues over there, whereas we have much more spectrum here to play with than what they do over there. I think there's other services and stuff like that.
But it'll grow a whole lot more when they switch off analog TV as well.
Yeah, well.
Why don't they offer roaming between networks? It seems to me like a fantastic revenue raiser.
There may be someone listening who can tell us that.
Interesting. Correspondence, Andrew.
Yeah, we're about to wrap the show up for the evening.
I told you it needs to be 3 hours.
Yeah, no.
Kempi on the forum says, which media centre has the highest WAF? The WAF being the wife acceptability factor.
Now, this has been going for some time, hasn't it?
It's a great thread. Great thread on the forum. Kempi, you said this last week, I use an original...
It's not Ian Kemp, is it?
Well, it's Kempi. That's the username.
Okay. If that's Ian, hello, Ian. I think I know you.
Hi, Ian.
Yes.
Yes, we think we know you.
Electrician.
Is he?
Yeah.
I use an original Oh, yes, yes, he is.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. It's probably not even him, though.
No.
I use an original Xbox with Xbox Media Center as the media extender. I've got to agree it's very usable and streams from network sources without a problem. A reasonably new problem, though, has been presented with the advent of HD MKV files. Even with all networking lag issues addressed, like Wi-Fi links having been migrated to Ethernet, I've found the Xbox struggles badly with these higher def file types. What's an MKV file?
An MKV file is...
They're great.
It's a bit like an AVI file or a MOV file. It's a container that can contain other media streams.
Okay.
So an AVI file can contain, say, an MP3 audio stream alongside a MPEG-4 or a DivX or XVID video stream.
Mm-hmm.
A different AVI file might contain AC3 audio, which is like five-channel audio.
On the DVDs buy.
Yeah, it's a container that's used to contain different audio or video streams, but an MKV file is a more advanced, newer version of that that allows you to have to take advantage of some of the features with high definition content.
Mm.
So it's geared more towards having high definition video streams in it and five channels or 5.1 channel surround audio in it and that sort of stuff. So
if you're into ripping and backing up your Blu-ray discs, you can't beat MKV files because it also contains subtitle information as well.
Yeah, which AVI files never did properly.
That's right. Multiple sound encoding, DTS or AC3, as Graham was just saying. A very versatile format. So, and it also works brilliantly with the Western Digital live boxes.
Or yeah, unless you've got that particular version of the firmware where the audio won't sync up properly. But
I'll upgrade.
It works better now, yeah.
Well, Kempe says, as the original Xbox does not have a high-definition output, it's a shame to waste the time getting these HD files and watching them low-def anyway. But for those that are interested, he's put a bit of a hack on the forum there. Quick and nasty solution using an inbuilt transcoder in VOOS. VOOS is the new software application formerly known as Azurius. It's a peer-to-peer file sharing program. I won't read it all because it goes into quite some detail, but Kempe, that's a great post. Thank you very much for putting it there. He's also put some WAF scores up. He's got Xbox Media Center on Xbox WAF equals 6 out of 10. Media Portal WAF equals 4 out of 10. I'm sure the interface is okay. It scores low because it's on a PC. It's got some more good information there and some links.
Can I just ask with the WAF factor?
Yes.
It's no longer really a WAF factor. It's a kid factor. If the kids can drive it, what's the problem?
Oh, you still have to satisfy the WAF. You still need a...
Well, yeah, but the kids can show the WAF how it works.
Yeah, but, you know...
or just do it in place.
You just
of,
need to consider the signal-to-noise ratio, because if...
Yeah, but just, if you're like me, you're never home, so it matters not.
Well, that's all right. That's a, that's a
hello,
thinking
Dan, if you're listening.
That's thinking outside the square approach. GD in our forum says, does Ghost... 2003 work with Windows 7, but then he answered his own question and said, it does. So that's good.
Thanks. Yeah, it's good. No, actually, I use it to ghost some of my machines.
Do you? Ghost 2003?
Yes, my machines, yes.
Well, if you need to use you need a solution like Ghost for 2007, GD says it works.
Did you know there's an open source equivalent to Ghost that actually works really well?
Do tell. Last one of these tips that we got from you, Graham, it was revolutionised how we actually changed our CD burning habits, wasn't it?
It was.
He's ferociously typing on his keyboard.
Yeah, just to make sure I get the name of it right.
So, GD, listen up. This is an alternative to Ghost.
Because Ghost is a really good thing, especially if you want to make... Like, you've built your brand new computer and it's working the best it will ever work.
You've
before
got all
you
the drivers
start,
set up and absolutely. Everything's pristine. It's never crashed.
That's right. And then what you do then is you make an image of the hard drive so that if all else fails, you just come back to that image and guess what? It works just as good as it did the day you did that image.
But Ghost costs you money. You have to go and pay a lot
semantic.
Of money. And and if you've got lots of machines, you have to license each one separately. And it can get a big deal if you're... Yeah, if you're a small company but you've got five or six computers, it can be quite a cost for... keeping clones of your machines or that sort of stuff. But the open source alternative is called Clonezilla.
Okay.
CloneZilla, clonezilla.org.
Mozilla with a clone on the front of it.
Yeah.
And you've used this product, Graham?
Certainly have, yeah.
And how easy is it to use as opposed to the competition?
It's relatively easy.
Yeah?
Yeah, you burn it to a CD or you can make up a memory stick and you boot from that. And it basically asks you a few questions, and if you don't understand the answers, you can have a look at the website, and it'll help guide you through. And you can easily make a copy of your stuff. You can connect to a network drive and save it to that, or you can save it to a USB connected device if you've got a USB hard disk. Or for one project I was doing the other day, I went out and I got a 16 gig memory thumb drive. Memory
flash
stick,
drive, yes.
Flash drive and plugged it in and just had Clonezilla and saved the image straight to that same.
That's what I do for
drive,
my
yeah.
media composers. Exactly that. Because I don't run many, like the machines I build at work are designed to run basically one or two pieces of software and that's it. Nothing else gets loaded onto them. And if they crash or fall over because of a hard drive issue or something like that.
All your media is probably on other external drives and things.
Yeah.
So the PC itself is expendable.
That's right.
So if it does something strange, it's going to be much more time efficient for you to just blow it away, put it back to how
that's
it
right.
was when it was delivered.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And it's a great way to back up all the machines so that it just works if
and
you need
Mac
it to
And Mac users
work.
Would know that disk utility that comes with the operating system will do an archive backup. And Carbon Copy Cloner is my freeware cloner
Carbon
of choice.
Carbon Copy Cloner.
There you
does
go.
All the file allocations or Mac OS, whatever.
And the wonderful thing I found with Carbon Copy Cloner, not only will it clone and provide an image of your Mac OS partition, but if you've got Windows installed on your Mac,
does it too.
It'll do that as well.
That's a handy little gadget, isn't it?
So there you go. There's the... I'm not saying that Ghost isn't a good product. Ghost is a fantastic product and well worth the cost if that's what you need.
It is
proprietary. Yep. And if you're not quite prepared to spend the money, then there's some alternatives that'll get you there without having to spend that money.
TARDIS in our chat room says another free one worth considering is Todo Backup, which is at TODO-backup.com. Now, Bruce says, first, a query re-email addresses. Hi, folks. A month or so ago, I sent an email to you blokes, us blokes, via Tech Talk Radio website. The email address was mail@techtalkradio.com.au. However, on the show, you regularly refer to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au as the address to use. I was wondering if you could let me know how these two addresses should be used.
As you wish. They both work. They all come to the same destination, I think, last time I checked.
Bruce, no hard and fast rules. Use your email addresses responsibly. Second, you have had several discussions of late about the future.
Mail is more for a, other things. Feedback is more about the program.
There you go. Of internet newspaper sites and the prospect of payment being required to view such sites.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about this the other day, weren't we?
We had an interesting discussion with our aunt, but Anthony and Graham were, a couple of weeks ago about exactly
this. Yes, we were coming at it from very different points of view, weren't we?
You were.
Go back and have a listen to that show 2 weeks ago, yeah.
I entirely agree with you, blokes. What I require from such sites is analysis and commentary. If an event of importance occurs, then it will be reported almost immediately on radio, internet and TV. Where the newspaper can value add, to use the jargon, is in analysing the background, the consequences, etc., of the event.
You mean investigative journalism?
Yes, maybe this is what Rupert Murdoch is looking at charging
went
for.
Went out the door with Twitter.
I would hope so.
Keep up the good work. Thanks, Bruce. Thank you for the feedback.
Yeah,
very good.
I think Graham would be in furious agreement with you.
Absolutely.
Bruce. Yes. That's all our correspondence for this week, Andrew.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Can I just say that there was one thing that really impressed me. Actually, there were two things that really impressed me whilst I was at the NAB conference in Las Vegas, which is the National Association of Broadcasters. It happens every year around Easter, and it showcases all the latest and greatest technologies that are available for content creation people, such as me. And the biggest thing that I saw over there, one of the biggest things, was 3D. It's absolutely everywhere, guys. You walk into the Sony Pavilion down there and you get handed your 3D glasses and what do you see but these amazing images of things coming at you in 3D. But that's not just Sony. It's Panasonic. It's all the other major manufacturers. Everybody has 3D stuff now, which is out there ready to capture everything and anything. And the sporting events, we're watching some baseball in 3D. Sport in 3D is pretty impressive, I must admit. And of course, the other great thing too is we're capturing in high definition, if not even higher. Some of the big screens over there are 4K screens and they are just amazing. You think HD's a step up on standard def. Wait till you see a 4K screen. My goodness me.
That's even higher definition than 1080.
4K using OLED technology is just awesome.
Now, 4K is a format that was designed for digital movie theatres.
That's what you see if you go to a digital cinema. You'll either see 2K or 4K at your local village digital cinema.
So does that mean we have to go out and buy yet another
disc?
Can't. Or will Blu-ray do 4K?
No. 4K is not destined for the living room. It's right. For content creation. It's for filmmakers and the likes. And for,
so these 4K screens are the equivalent of your studio monitor speakers. They're not something you're going to put in your lounge room.
That's right. Although there'll be some, if people can find a 4K stream, I'm sure they will do it. But it's awesome. If you're out there shooting feature films and things like that, these monitors are just like, it's like looking out a window. Mm. I know we said that about HD, but if you can imagine the difference between standard def and high def, and then high def and 4K, it's the same, if not tenfold, the difference as you look at these screens. And it's just amazing. So, stand back and you look at these things and you go, wow, that's awesome. But
we were saying on the phone the other the other day that the high-definition sport, and I think we were talking about soccer at the time. I can't remember who we were talking to. Was that with...
I think it might have been Adam.
It could have been with Adam. The players don't look connected within the scene, that it doesn't look realistic, that there's something that doesn't look quite right when you're looking at sport in 3D.
You could say that. I guess you could also say that things don't look quite right just before your car hits something as you're driving down the freeway too. It's just one of those things you need to get used to. 3D...
Well, this is not an experience I want in my lounge room.
Well, it's funny. It's a lot of the stuff you'd put your glasses on, take your glasses off as you'd wander around NAB and have a look at these things. And you'd sort of take your glasses off and be like, oh, wow, I'm back in the real world again. Whereas... once you put your glass on, all the line structure, and I guess one of the things I notice is if you're looking at a two-dimensional screen, everything around you, you can focus on. You can see the dot on the wall. You can see the nick in the screen. You can see the pixel that's gone on your monitor.
Yeah, you see the pot plant beside the television.
That's right. You can see the line structure, unless you're looking at 4K, but you can see the line structure and all that sort of stuff on your screens. Now, as soon as you go into the 3D world, that all disappears. It's things you no longer focus on a spot on a screen, or everything in your peripheral vision seems to disappear, and you only can concentrate on what's in the 3D space. So whether that's what you're sort of referring to about, Graham, I'm not sure, but yeah, it is. It is different. And I guess there's now medical concerns, even on the US television I was looking at over there. They were sort of saying, how is 3D vision going to impact our day-to-day life? And the big concern over there is the 3D gaming, which is the kids playing games for
six or eight hours a day. 3D screens for that long, and you come out, how long does it take to adjust back to the real world before it's safe to drive a car?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's one of the questions that they're talking about. You look at policing here, they police for drugs, they police for alcohol.
Mm.
But what about policing for
3D? Perception disturbance with 3D. It's not just driving a car. It might be a hazard crossing the road. because you might not be able to correctly judge how fast the car is approaching when you're just crossing the road.
I have a naive noob question about 3D television. Can the 3D signal be broadcast on a high-definition channel?
Yes.
Can it be broadcast on a standard-definition channel?
It's in the encoding. There's no reason why it can't be broadcast in standard-definition channel. It's just to do with the screen that you have at the other end.
Is there particularly more information that's broadcast in the data-wise?
I'd imagine you'd need twice the amount of data because you need two images. You need an image for the left eye and an image for the right eye.
Yeah, and then you compress it all and then you can do dynamic. But anyway, that's a bit beyond the scope of the program here. But you have a look at the Blu-ray standards, the 3D Blu-ray standard was ratified, I think, December last year. And the new players like the Pioneer, the Sony 370, which is coming out. And Adam's got a very interesting thing to talk about this fairly shortly. A lot of the new players will actually support the 3D signal. And then you just need a monitor to watch it on, whether you choose to wait and buy one later down the track. All the actual monitors I saw in NAB were passive. There are no active monitors anywhere
to
be seen.
What does that mean?
That is that the glasses are just normal glasses that you wear. You don't wear, the new ones that are out at the moment, they need
with
to charge.
Shutters. Yeah.
Yeah, there's none of that at NAB. It was all passive glasses. So if you lose your glasses, you're not up for big bucks.
Like the glasses you have when you go to 3D in the movies.
Yeah, exactly the same as the movie theatre glasses and stuff like that.
So did you see any 3D?
Did they say Real D on the side of them, just out of curiosity?
I think they did.
Yeah,
I think they did.
So exactly the same, literally.
Yeah.
The Real D ones, by the way, are the circular polarised ones. So it doesn't matter what angle you have your head on. Which is different.
There you go.
Which is different to the ones we used when we went to 3D in IMAX, which are horizontal, linearly polarized, but at a 90-degree angle. If you tip your head on the side, then you lose the 3D effect.
Yes, you do. But no, these ones,
with the circular ones, you don't.
I'm pretty sure had Real D.
That's the big special thing about Real D. Yeah.
Sorry, Dr. Ryan?
No, that's all right. Is there any technology that you saw at NAB which doesn't require you to wear glasses?
No, not that I saw at NAB, but I did see it at Simpty 6 months prior to that in Sydney. Sony weren't displaying that 4K monitor, which is a 3D native thing there.
Well, that's interesting
It is interesting.
It's the most enormous trade show, NAB. You'd think that they would have a sample of all the different types of technology on display
to
look at and compare them side by side, but...
You would think. But even the new 3D cameras, National Panasonic, they actually have almost a consumer version camera ready to roll, which is a 3D dual lens camera, which is in Australia now.
Crikey, high def little camcorders are going to start coming down in price, aren't they? That's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is the new thing on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
So, that was the other, that was the major revelation of NAB. Also, a lot of the main cinema cameras, I think there's been a lot of influence in 3D movie making of recent times. You know that there's two particular types of high-end cameras that they use. They use a RED camera or they use a Panavision camera with high-definition SR decks on the back or the RED proprietary format that they record onto. And you could see the RED cameras everywhere, which are the dual lenses, one camera mounting from vertically down through a 45-degree lens and one camera shooting back through basically through the lens as well. So you've got 90-degree angles for the two cameras shooting out through a 45-degree proper lens, which is all pretty much how they're starting to shoot all this 3D stuff these days. And they were absolutely everywhere through NAB.
You're going to have a PhD in optics to be able to produce a movie.
That's exactly right. It's not for your average wannabe cinematographer to get out there and set it up. Having spoken to a couple of guys who have shot on 3D, it can take many hours to set the shot up properly before you can actually roll on it, which gives good effect. So
how's it going to work if dad at home has got a handy camera and wants to get and spends the money on one of these new 3D type cameras and wants to get the kids playing in the park or on the trampoline?
This is purely speculation here, but you're not going to get the effect, or you're not going to get the result that you're seeing in a cinema purely because there's a lot of work goes in setting up those sort of shots. It's really going to be 2D-ish glorified, I suspect. But hey, wait until we see it. Wait until it actually appears. The other interesting thing, and I know I've gone on quite a bit about it, this will probably interest you, Graham, too, is the revolution that we're now seeing in digital SLR cameras. Mm. In particular, the brand which I saw over there was the new Canon 5D Mark II cameras. Were absolutely amazing. For $2,500, you get a camera which is a 21 megapixel device which records true HD. In fact, they're actually shooting feature films on these cameras, and it's just, the results are just mind-blowing. And everyone's going, oh, yeah, and you get the true cinematographers out there going, how can you do this? How can you do this?
It's sacrilegious. You don't have a real camera.
That's right. But once you see the results on a $2,500 camera in a 2D environment and compare it to some of the HD stuff that's out there, this is just amazing technology. And of course, Canon are no, they've been around for a long time. They're not as if they're a newcomer to the industry.
Not at all. No.
Their lenses are well respected and highly regarded. They've got 60 lenses that you can plug onto their standard SLR cameras. They're all interchangeable. They work for television as well as working for still stuff. Yeah, they've been making amazing lenses for years and years and years. And also for the fact that some of their HD cameras and stuff like that they work in television now. But this particular camera was just absolutely amazing. So that was one of my other highlights, is seeing these, where the new digital SLR cameras are going to go. And they're only going to get better and cheaper. And with these tools in their hands.
I want one already.
Oh, look. For $2,500, the kit with a standard lens was about $3,000 US. It was amazing. And you probably wouldn't need any other camera. But the downside of that is it'll be superseded in 6 months' time, and it'll fall down to about $1,000. So wait 6 months, guys, and then try and do it.
But by then the next model will be on its way out, and I'll want that instead.
Bigger and better.
But see, 21 megapixels, that's a lot of pixels. That's a lot of imagery to get onto one device.
You'd probably take a nice photograph with that.
Yeah, and the other thing too, to put it into perspective, the Canon show stand at NAB would have been approximately, marginally less than the same floor stand as what Sony had, just to put it into perspective. Mm-hmm. Also, there was no Nikon, there was no Pentax, there was no any of the other major brands there. The only people that I saw there doing SLRs and digital SLRs was Canon.
That's interesting.
But is this because it was really for the motion picture industry, or?
No, not really.
Because you wouldn't expect Nikon to go along to something that's talking about movies.
There's a valid point, JD. In that area. It's a valid point, but they were actually selling their digital SLRs, and they had people talking about SLR technology and it's like still photographers there as opposed to motion photographers talking on their stands, and I think that was quite a credit to them.
What are those cameras they've got on the moon? Who makes those? Hasselblad.
Yeah.
Are they still around?
Yeah, they've got a 33 or a 50 megapixel camera out. Yeah.
A 50 megapixel?
I'm pretty sure they did some time ago. Yeah.
Yeah?
They're still around.
50 megapixels.
Full frame, the 120 format. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? And that's the other thing, too, with digital SLRs. It's the actual size of the chip behind the lens. You want a big chip because the bigger the chip, the more light, the better the image quality and all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah.
Advantage
of those large format cameras, yeah.
So that they were really some of the highlights, I think, of the trip to NAB, apart from the fact that the technology there was pretty mind-blowing, some of the stuff that we've got to look forward to. 3D, definitely on the way to go. Just hold off buying any 3D tellies for the time being. Wait until you get all the new... And Adam's going to talk about this after the break when we come back, is what's happening with video on demand here in Australia too. And once again, the things that you need to be able to receive and utilise video on demand in your house from the Channel 7s and the iViews and things like that we have now. Time for a break. Back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, I had a very bad experience with this phone.
From a control freak of a company that made the device.
Does that surprise anybody in this room?
Oh, okay. This is a different world.
Oh, yeah. There's got to be one in every country. Is he trying to censor the internet too?
Maybe this should be in /rant.
You'd have to have a screen that reflected the image, preserving the polarisation.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What do you mean? I've got lots of buttons over here.
Click. Careful. We'll click one to shut us up.
You might.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Yes.
Welcome back to... you're here again.
I am here again. Off you go. You take it. I'm happy for that. My voice is giving up on me. Can you tell? I'm very croaky.
Indeed. It's good to have you back. It was a very strange feeling not having you here.
Really? I must admit, I haven't had a chance to listen to the shows yet because the first time I was heading over there, I think I was in the sky when you did the first show.
The first show? Yeah, you would have been. That's right.
And on the way back...
In the sky on the way back as well, weren't you?
I was in the sky on the way back, but I was asleep. And I actually downloaded the show whilst I was sitting at Los Angeles Airport.
Yes.
I found some Wi-Fi and I thought, I'll download the show and put on my iPod thingy in my iPhone.
And we put you
thingy.
To sleep. Is that what you're telling us?
No. Well, see, what happens is you fly out of LA at 11 o'clock in the evening and you're ready for a kip anyway. So they feed you. And the next thing you know, you're dead to the world.
Belly full of food.
Yeah.
Couple of vinos.
And you're flying with the night, so you get a really long night and you miss a day. Mm. And, it was one of those really bizarre sort of things where you sort of like, I think I'll just have a kip now. And you wake up about 6 hours later and it's still dark. You think, oh, have I woken up? And you look at your watch and you go, oh, that's good. I've had a good sleep. So
if you can sleep on a long-haul flight, then you need to sleep.
Absolutely. 14 hours. And that's the other thing. Why does it take 12 and a half hours to get there and it takes about 16 hours to get back? Someone told me it was the jet stream. I don't know. Anyone know?
The actual flying time is longer coming back.
It takes longer to get back.
Yeah, it's an extra hour and a half.
Yeah. It just takes forever to get back.
It's like flying north and south in Australia. It's quicker. What is quicker going north? Coming south.
Well, there you go.
It's downhill.
Mm. It's downhill. Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway. I'm glad...
So easily amused.
He is over there. Sorry. It's not what we're saying. It's what he's looking at on the screen, right?
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Canon cameras again.
Canon cameras. We found the Hasselblad cameras, didn't we?
We did.
Well, just $25,000.
60 megapixel and just under $27,000.
Yeah. It can be
outside the price range of the average happy snapper like me. Mm-hmm.
And you don't need full format anyway.
No.
Unless you're a professional. No.
You're showing off your picture frame in the break. That's pretty good.
Yeah, if only the viewers at home could be here and have a look at it. That's one of the good things about the iPod. It's good for snaps.
I'm impressed with how responsive the user interface is. It's very fast, isn't it? Very responsive. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I have to do a bit of a cull on some of the selects and my photos there. So there's some every man and his dog, you know, the out of focus ones that you tend to sneak in because I haven't culled them yet, but they're there. But no, there's some good snaps in and around Google.
You think I'm not going to waste the film? I'm just going to go click, 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 and I'll keep some good ones and delete the rest.
When we when I did the thing, Lyd and I went through Google, Jake was the man who took us through there. Some interesting statistics too, that if you ever have a look at Google, have a look at the Google complex on Google Earth, you'll notice that there's solar panels basically on every roof in the complex. And he was saying that Google takes one third of its energy off the roof of the building. That's not bad for
a
company.
That's pretty good for a company that size.
And for that, in that very power-hungry industry that takes a third of its energy off the roof.
Do they feed power back into the grid?
No, not if they take only a third. No, I suspect they would use it all. Just do the maths on that one, Dr. Ron.
Well, it depends on how much they were paying and how much they got paid to put it back. No, I don't suppose it would be cost-effective.
And they'd be big enough that they'd probably get rid of the step-up, step-down transformer issue and wastage. So they'd go straight into their 12 and 5 volts in their servers and so forth.
Mm.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Thought, yeah.
They don't have to get all the way up to 240 or anything like that. They're going to be halfway.
You just waste the energy and heat.
Yes.
Transformers.
Mm. Yes. And as we wandered through the cafeteria inside Google, Eric was there having afternoon tea or lunch, I think it was at the time, with a colleague. So very approachable, those guys. Very approachable inside indeed. Be a good place to work. Mm. But like everything, if you think Google's watching us over here, imagine what it'd be like over there. I think there'd be no part of the campus would be, everyone would be know what's going on around the place. But, yeah, it was a very interesting time. Had a good look around the joint. And
So it's actually open to the public?
No.
Okay. stop there, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, no, you can't sort of like just rock up and say, g'day, I'm here for the tour.
Well, that's what I had an image of, like maybe they had like guided tours.
2 o'clock tour,
yes. Yeah, they showed you select parts that were open to the public or something. But
well, you can actually wander through the exterior parts of Google.
Mm.
Although if you don't have a pass on, you might attract the attention of a security person and they might just say, thanks, but can you leave, please? But yeah, and other than that, if you've got a pass, you can pretty much, providing you're escorted around the place, you can get inside and see some of the interesting stuff. But yeah, the 3D Google Earth was also a very impressive thing, which I saw while I was there. And of course, the data, I think I've spoken to you guys off air about it, but they've got an orb, or it's a big screen which shows the Earth. And projecting off the Earth three-dimensionally is rays of light over particular land masses. Now, each colour of the actual light represents a language, and the height off the planet represents the traffic or the search traffic in that particular continent in that particular language. Now, admittedly, it was dark in Australia when we had a look, but there's nothing comes out of now, Australia compared to the rest of the world.
This sounds like a supervillain's lair, doesn't it? With a globe of the world with our activities around the world.
Yeah, and they can, with a flick of a switch, they can look at major international traffic carrying networks. So they can see where the data's flying from one side of the United States to the other and through Pacific Oceans and under Indian Oceans. And yeah, if there's a clog, they can see. It's a graphical representation of where there may be a disruption of data flow. Very impressive.
Artie in our chat room says, they do know evil, but we knew that, Artie. Any pets inside at work?
Any pets?
Yeah, did you trip over any...
Hang on, how did you spell that? They do know evil?
They do know evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any... No, Artie spelt it, so they do know... No, N-O, evil. There is no evil. Not that they do know evil. Graham, you word punner. Did you trip over any dogs or cats?
No.
Or
Budgerigars.
No, I didn't. But can I tell you, you might be familiar with Google doing, you know, the artwork that they have for the little Google logos?
They had one on recently, which was a space station.
Yeah. Well, when every summer, I think it is in the United States, I'm not sure whether it comes out this far to Australia, but they have a competition where the kids can do their own Google drawings and send them in. And if their artwork wins, well, then they get to be part of the Google
homepage for the day or whatever.
That's right. Yep. Can I tell you that Google keeps every single one of them, and if as you walk through some of the places, all you see is just walls of artwork
that's
of the
fantastic.
Kids' stuff inside Google.
Isn't that great?
Which I thought was really, really nice. Mm. So, you know, and as Lyd said at the time to Jake, he said, you should tell people about this, because it was a really nice thing to have all the kids' artwork stuck up inside the walls of this pretty amazing search engine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, should we talk about other things? Because seriously,
I'm looking for where we are with the rundown. We're right at the top here, aren't we?
We are. Item number 15. Three. I think, the second one down. Alcatel-Lucent gets 100 megabits per second. This is quite an interesting thing. In their recent press release, they've quoted Ovum analyst, and he shall remain nameless, Mr. Ganguly. Really?
Oh.
Alcatel-Lucent Bell Labs DSL Phantom Mode lab tests added a whole new dimension to the ongoing 100 megabit per second debate. And basically what they've managed to do is over existing copper loops, they can facilitate 300 to 400 megabits per second, which is reshaping the whole next generation broadband over the old copper network. That's pretty phenomenal speeds.
We don't need a broadband network anymore. We just put it over the copper again.
The existing copper network that we have now. If Alcatel-Lucent are achieving speeds like that over copper in a lab...
But we've got people who currently can't get any decent speeds with the existing ADSL technology. ADSL is up to 24 megabits per second, but we've got people who can't get... They're struggling to get 1 meg out of it.
Because of their distance from the exchange
or poor quality lines and other problems like that.
Yes. Not getting an argument out of me, Graham.
So this
is in the lab. This is you know, controlled conditions. Go down to Dick Smith, buy a bit of copper cable, and run 100 meters and see what you get at the other end. You know, it's that type of control.
But why keep pushing this technology on phone lines that were never designed to do it? That have been in the ground for 100 years, nearly 100 years now. So.
Yes, I agree with you.
Well, I mean, we just heard Andrew talking about the mobile broadband in America, and we haven't heard about the landline networks over there.
It's all above the ground.
Right.
It's not like, you know, hear how Telstra put it all in the ground, in the potholes. Mm. It's all above the ground. The other thing which is really quite freaking, I was talking to Mark Diggins about it, actually, because he works out of Boston, and he's rolling out the new LTE technology for some of the carriers up there in the northern part of America. The something which is very foreign to us here is that our power poles are out in the nature strip out the front of our houses. In the United States, they're in the backyards.
The backyard?
Absolutely. You'll find that there'll be a common power pole nestled in the backyard amongst you know, maybe six or eight houses. And unlike here, where you can actually go and, you know, a utility can climb a pole and put something on it. It doesn't happen that way in the United States. You have to get approval from everyone who can see the pole in the street, pretty much. Like, if you wanted to go and put, as Mark says, a rubbish can up on top of one of the poles, which is his you know, slang for putting a mobile base station on top of it, you have to actually get the permission of all the landholders to do it. Which is the exact opposite of what you get here.
Yeah, here so, they just do it.
So it's really
a dirty great hole in your nature strip. That, yeah,
that's right. Whereas over there, it's, you know, you've got this pole in the backyard. And the other thing too is that the cable where all the pay TV and the internet comes in on is so low that when you stand in the backyard, you can actually touch it as you're standing there. Oh, here's your fly in, and you put your hand up and you can actually grab hold of it. It's that low. So, and I guess the benefit of it is, if you look at some of the snaps that I've got, or you just go and have a look at Street View in Palo Alto or any of those more well-to-do suburbs, you won't see power poles because they're all in the backyards.
That'd make it look messy.
It would.
This is interesting news that Alcatel-Lucent have come out with about 100 megabits per second on ADSL. Matthew last week was telling us that they have the optic fiber to a lot of premises over there, but whereas that could run into hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of megabits per second, it is actually limited, I think you said, up to about 100 megabits per second where you have optic fiber so that they can provision it and they can give everybody, like, guarantee a certain, like, service level, if you like. So if they have an optic fiber going into a dozen houses in a street, they'll guarantee, yes, we'll give you 100 megabits per second on this piece of optic fiber into your house. And then they can structure the backbone so that it can accommodate that for each of the users.
Well, that could be along the lines of what Graham was sort of arguing about before. How come, you know, DSL doesn't work so flash to a lot of people off exchanges? Well, if you remove the equation of the last 100 metres, or the last mile, I think they used to call it, you could actually bring fibre to a node, put it up a pole, put it in a pit or something like that in the street, and then run copper from the last little bit. So you're not actually using
So instead of
that,
having to do ADSL all the way back to the exchange, you only have to do ADSL back to the pillar.
So we have optic fibre to the pillar, and then we only have, like, a few houses worth that distance where the copper wire is used.
That last little bit would be very expensive for running fibre. Very, very expensive. So, whereas if you pull up manhole covers in any major city centre street these days, chances are there'll be the blue fibre optic cable running up and down the street anyway. So, anyway, in other interesting news, I think you touched on this on the opening of the show too, Dr. Ron. McAfee had a bit of a boo-boo with inadequate quality control with their antivirus stuff. So, anyone running antivirus stuff, continuous reboots, continuous restarts and stuff like that, because it treated, I think, one of the main Windows files as a nasty
Syst.ini or something.
Yeah. So I can't have this. I'm going to delete it.
Look, it caused absolute chaos for McAfee users around the world.
I'm not
Australia.
A McAfee user, but I don't know any firsthand.
No, I'm not either. They said that it affected, they reckon it affected users of Microsoft's Windows XP Service Pack 3, corporate users. They released another update the same day, which fixed the problem that they had caused, but not before hundreds of thousands of computers were affected. They, as you said, Andrew, started rebooting. And
not good, huh?
Well, no, there were, like, retail outlets like Coles, for example. They actually had to close stores because the tills just weren't working at their cash registers. So it had a massive impact.
So, yes, if you've noticed that, I guess obviously there's patches and things like that are available to try and fix that. But maybe you haven't downloaded the actual update yet. Because that would have come through one of their patches, wouldn't it? The semantic update. Live update, that's what they use, isn't it?
Probably. No, live update is semantic. We're talking about McAfee.
Oh, yes, sorry, wrong brand. Different. Forget what I just said. Just rewind and erase that bit from the podcast. Yes, good. The other thing too, which I thought was quite cute, is Android now runs on the iPhone.
Yay, I saw that. Isn't that great?
Yeah, is that good?
Now I asked,
does that fly in the face of Apple as
asked Adam two episodes ago about his brand new iPad. Is it running Android yet? I think he thought I was joking. He laughed. He went, ha, 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 good one, Dr. Ron. It would. I'm serious. I want Android running on the iPad. Yeah. But someone's got it up and running on the iPhone, so that's good. That's a start. The iPad will follow.
In fact, he's got a an open source bootloader now that'll run Linux and Android or the iPhone operating
system. Yeah, so you select what operating system you want it to load when you turn the device on. So you can say load up the normal conventional iPhone operating system.
Mm. Now, it's still fairly slow, but you know, with a bit of time and tweaking, I'm sure it'll work just
now,
as quick.
Now, if you think we're pulling your leg, it's on YouTube. Go and have a look, because the guys who did it, the iPhone dev team member, Planet Being, already famous for reporting of the Linux 2.6 kernel to the iPhone in 2008, uploaded a YouTube video last Wednesday demonstrating an iPhone 2G successfully running on Android.
Oh, and the files to do it yourself are available.
There you go. Shall we do it as another project, another science project, AD? We'll have to give it a go. We can run Cupcake on it or something like that.
I love it. Linux on iPhone. .blogspot.com.
You're going to go and buy an iPhone now just so you can run Linux on it?
So I can run Android. It's great.
Does that mean you go to the Android shop and run up Android apps on the iPhone?
It's not a mock-up either. He's obviously got it installed and running, and he talks you through it on that little video there, and it's very impressive, actually. I thought, this is good. Why has it taken so long, I thought, I'm glad it's here now.
And all the basic functions work. So he demonstrates Wi-Fi working. I'm not sure about the camera. I suspect it works, but I don't recall.
He made a call. He sent a text message to himself. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that'll do it. That's a good test.
Mm.
Same network, same device.
And the big home button is that what you call it? You call it home button?
Yeah, home button. Yeah. And he's had to use the volume up and down to simulate some of the other buttons off the Android phone.
That's right, because the Android phone has more physical buttons than the iPhone, which just has one.
Can I tell you one of the downsides of the iPad, apart from the fact that it won't, tether to anything apart from a wireless network? So, because if you've got an iPhone and you want to have Wi-Fi out to connect, you can't tether it to the iPhone and use the network.
You just jailbreak your iPhone.
Correct. I was alluding to that, and he's jumped the gun beautifully. I actually managed to do that. I jumped onto one of the Rock thing and downloaded my Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And my Wi-Fi on a jailbroken iPhone allows the iPad beautifully to tether. So when you're driving along in the car with the kids, they can still use all the internet functions through the Wi-Fi network of the iPhone.
So have you jailbroken your iPad?
No, not yet. I haven't had it that long.
Okay. Are you going to?
I don't know.
Can you? Can you, JD?
You can. Yeah,
you can. You can jailbreak the iPad.
Mm.
Right.
There's no reason why not, I wouldn't imagine.
So you can load non-Apple applications on it.
Hey, JD, one of the things that did happen while I was away overseas is OS 4 was talked about.
Yes, and up to beta 2 now.
We talked about that.
With real multitasking, and Mr. Jobs came out and sung the verses. Not quite?
Well, yes, there is multitasking, but it's still up to Apple to approve the app.
They did the hard sell. They had all the geeks come in from all the other places. Like, one of the things which would have been... Well, actually, it saved my soul while I was traveling through the United States was having Skype running in background on my iPhone.
But you didn't do that on version 4, did you?
No, I didn't do that on version 4. But it allowed me to stay in contact with the people at home because they could just Skype me anywhere. Skype in numbers work absolutely brilliantly, and it rings your mobile wherever you are. But you can't normally run Skype, or Fring for that matter.
In the background,
unless you actually jailbreak the phone. So, but interesting. What were your takes on OS 4, out of curiosity?
It looks interesting. Basically, what they're saying is that they'll give developers the opportunity to write applications that either get push notifications and then respond as a result, or can run in the background, which obviously iPhone apps have been doing for a while. So, you know, Safari runs in the background, Mail runs in the background anyway. So it's not new. It's just allowing developers to access that.
But it's not full multitasking, is it? It's only certain methods and certain ways, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
So you can't have your game playing in the background, you switch to something else, and then you switch back to your game. It doesn't quite work like that.
No.
I had the great pleasure of walking down the streets of Palo Alto in California, as you do. Very lovely suburb, just, you know, 40 minutes south of San Francisco. Came across Mr. Jobs' house, as you do, because he lives in Palo Alto. He's got a lovely, beautiful front yard full of apple trees, believe it or not, and carrots. It was great.
Well, he does wear glasses, I suppose. He needs carotene.
It's a lovely place. Well, and sorry about the I'm a PC sticker on the mailbox, Steve, but anyway. No, it wasn't us.
Did you really?
but no, he's as we were walking down the street, his silver Mercedes was parked in the driveway there. There were two cars there.
Oh, so he was home?
He was home, yeah.
Did he ask you in for cuppa?
No.
Oh.
We were just checking out the real estate up and down, I think it's Waverley Street in Palo Alto.
Oh, yeah.
And directly opposite or diagonally opposite his place, there was a house up for sale worth about $4.5 million. You guys have just seen the photos of the house here. A very lovely little place, but, you know, $4.5 million in Palo Alto. Boy, a nice little pad.
Nice cottage.
Nice cottage, yeah, directly. You can look out the window and say morning.
Live comfortably there, you reckon?
Live next door to Steve and say, good morning, Steve, as he comes out and picks a paper up in the morning. Oh, no, he wouldn't get a paper.
You think it'd be a good neighbour? You think it'd be... quiet sort of name, he wouldn't.
Well, no, he's got a great garden. It's put it this way, Steve's garden was quite unique compared to every other garden in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, every other garden in the street was meticulously mowed. The mow and blow guys were in. You know, not a weed to be seen anywhere. It's not like
they had a scruffy garden.
Well, no, he didn't have a scruffy garden. He had a well-kept vegetable, organic garden would be the way to do it. Like, you know, he's got the carrots underneath the apple tree. Yeah, hippie garden. That's a good way of putting it. And it was really quite, it was nice. Very refreshing to walk up and down the street there and see his place amongst the manicured lawns of Palo Alto.
Well, I reckon he'd have good internet access at his place.
Maybe.
With the 10,000 iPhones all Wi-Fi enabled.
Yeah, have them all hooked up in... in parallel or something. No, well, I wonder if they'd have fiber into those houses.
No, I didn't
houses.
Do what you just wrote in the chat either.
Yeah, well, yes. All right, then. That wasn't you.
No.
No, deniability, plausible deniability, no. Andrew.
But the other thing, too, is when I went to Apple, I just showed JD the picture of out the front of the mothership place. They've got all these invalid parking spots out the front. It says you can't park here. But I guess that's where all the PC people park when they go there. They just park in the spots out the front. Yes. So if you want to go there and your PC is, you can park right out the front.
I think Andrew's turning into a
bit cynical.
Lover. Yeah.
Cummings is making anti-PC jokes. He's got his iPad. He logged into the chat. So he's got his iPhone sitting beside
him.
He'll be getting an iMac at work.
Well, it's funny when we were...
Yeah, so there's not a netbook to be seen. Before he left for the United States, he had a netbook set up here. He's logged into the chat with.
No, I've got the netbook. It's out there. It's been made redundant this evening.
I can see that.
I thought I'd try the chat on the iPad tonight.
You've dropped it unceremoniously.
Hasn't even made it into the studio.
No, he's dropped it unceremoniously into the waste paper basket.
I said all. Come on, next you'll be calling me Adam Turner.
There's a bit... Oh, dear, just a complete change, complete 180 turnaround.
Absolutely. Oh, speaking of Adam Turner, that's a great segue, isn't it?
Oh, you better. We've got 5 minutes to go. You better roll him
running out. Late for a bit of Adam Turner stuff. Adam was talking a little bit tonight about the rollout of video on demand from places like Channel 7 and iView, what it means to the consumer, how you can use it, how you can do it. The bottom line is you still need a good set, but you can actually do a lot of the work in the peripherals these days. Here's the view from the couch this week. All about just that, how to take advantage of video on demand in your living room.
If you've been holding out on buying a Blu-ray player, online video might be the final temptation. It seems 2010 is turning into the year that Australian online video went large. Catch-up TV services such as ABC's iView, 7's Plus 7, and even the SBS's service are coming directly to new televisions from the likes of Panasonic and Sony, while Samsung and LG have cut deals with Telstra's Big Pond TV for content to stream directly to their televisions. Plus 7 looks very impressive on a Sony Bravia via the Bravia Internet Television platform, much sharper than Plus 7 running full screen in a browser on your computer. That's because 7 optimizes content for different platforms. SBS content is also available via the Bravia Internet service. It seems the ABC's iView is set to get the same optimization treatment, although the unfortunate trade-off is that iView access via televisions won't be unmetered, even if your ISP offers unmetered browser-based iView access. This is a situation the ABC hopes to remedy in the future. As for unmetered Plus 7, Yahoo 7 spokeswoman Amanda Miller says, "Not at this stage," which I'll take as a definite maybe. I think the lack of unmetering is a small price to pay to get such crisp online video directly onto your television. It's bandwidth that would have otherwise gone on BitTorrent anyway. I suspect easy access to catch-up TV services might put a dent in online piracy, which will hopefully encourage the other networks to accelerate their catch-up TV services. Nine's new Fixplay service is impressive, but 10's offering still needs polish.
Meanwhile, the content on Big Pond's online TV and movie services is woeful, and you really have to wonder if LG and Samsung have backed the wrong horse. I wouldn't be surprised if Big Pond strikes a deal with Nine's Fixed Play. Otherwise, I don't really see the point in buying Telstra's new T-Box, which is a combination personal video recorder and streaming media box. The Freeview Consortium is also working on a catch-up TV platform as another weapon in its war with Foxtel. Hopefully, the common enemy of pay TV will encourage the networks to take a coordinated approach to catch-up TV, which would be a major win for Couch Potatoes. While I'm excited about the boom in Australian online video, I'm not excited about the prospect of replacing my perfectly good television just to watch catch-up TV in the lounge room. Thankfully, vendors such as Sony are building their online video services into their Blu-ray players, so you can spend hundreds of dollars embracing online video rather than spending thousands on a new television. Sony's Paul Colley confirms the upcoming BDP S370 Blu-ray player will feature the same Bravia Internet television platform as the Bravia televisions, offering access to iView, SPS and Plus 7. Panasonic's VieraCast service works on its televisions and its Blu-ray players, offering little more than YouTube access. But unfortunately, Panasonic is restricting the new Plus 7 service to its televisions for now, and it won't be on its Blu-ray players. Meanwhile, Yahoo 7's Amanda Miller tells me that Plus 7 aims to be platform agnostic and that developers are talking to a number of vendors and looking at a range of devices. It seems that it's only a matter of time before Plus 7 comes to Panasonic Blu-ray players, along with a wealth of other devices such as the PlayStation 3. So what does it all mean? I've said it before and I'll say it again. When you're buying a new television, focus on picture quality and inputs. Let your components handle all the fancy new features and services such as catch-up TV and DLNA. It looks like Blu-ray players are evolving into that jack-of-all-trades devices to do most of the heavy lifting in your digital lounge room.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there, now you know, you want to go and buy yourself a device which plugs into your existing panel, which does all the hard work for you. So Blu-ray 3D will be here very shortly, if it's not here already. And
got to get a Blu-ray player. They're getting cheaper and cheaper, aren't they?
Yeah, $75 in the States, Best Buy.
Yeah, there was one here for $50 just recently I saw somewhere online Australia.
One thing I did buy and stuck in the suitcase on the way back was a PS3.
Oh, yes.
Wait, go back, you put one in your suitcase?
I put one in my suitcase,
yeah. A PS3?
It's not the iPad that put you over your...
It was the iPad that put me over because the PS3 in the United States was $250.
Well, this is news. So you're a PlayStation owner.
Shh.
This is news. Shh. This is breaking news.
There are people in our house that don't know
this. There are people in your house not listening. It's okay.
Short people.
I won't tell if you don't tell. What are you going to use it for?
I don't know. I just bought it because it was a good price.
PS3, that's great. So you've now got a Blu-ray player, which you already had, but it's in that.
Yeah.
Games console, very, very good games console.
I've got to get some games for it now.
Internet connectivity.
Yes.
It's not backwards compatible with the PS2 games, which sucks, Sony. It sucks, I've got to say.
Yes.
And the only reason I'm hanging on to the PS...
So you can't upgrade. Well, you blow all your games.
We're hanging on to the PS2 because we've got such an extensive PS2 library. Yeah. You just be throwing that all away.
Didn't there used to be a version that was backwards compatible?
You could
had
chip
the chip in it?
You could chip it and it would, okay. I think it would read the PS2 games, but the newer versions don't
have it. Mm.
Built-in obsolescence?
Yeah, well, it is. It's very frustrating. You pay a lot of money for the games.
Well, yeah, they're not cheap, are they? They're about $70 or $80 for a half-decent one.
Mm, if you've got, 15, 20, 30 games, you've invested a lot of money in that.
Absolutely.
In that library.
The thing which I thought was quite interesting from a game point of view is some of the more athletic games that the kids have been playing, like the rock guitar things and the full family. Not these sit down, use your thumbs type sort of stuff. I refuse to get those, but the other ones where they dance and stuff, I think would be quite good.
We had a birthday in the family not so long ago of someone that might be in the studio.
Happy birthday, Jody.
It was a little while ago now, but thank you. We got the... Oh, I forgot what it is now. We got the family game pack. Now, basically, it's a mat that connects to our Wii. game console from Nintendo. Better qualify that. A lot of people use it for dancing. This one actually comes with a range of other games. So you can stand on it and run. You can step and do play whack-a-mole with your feet, so to speak, if you're familiar with whack-a-mole. Or you can sit down on it and lean side to side and canoe and raft and do all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's the fun
stuff.
It is
just brilliant.
That's what I wanted to get because that's what I've been seeing over there. I've got to get the games for it over here, but obviously I've got to make sure. That was one thing. So it was a bit of a spur of the moment decision. I thought, you can't go wrong for that amount of money because JB Hi-Fi over here had them for $486. And when you're
the games over here are cheap. So Band Hero, we've been sort of
looking
at.
That's one of the things I
want
to get.
That's getting cheaper and cheaper all the time.
Yeah. So we'll drag that out. But the multi-voltage power supply means that it's just plugged in everywhere, 50 or 60 hertz. I don't think that's an issue because it'll obviously pull it all down to 12 volts DC by the time it starts doing its work or even less in the device. And the only other thing was that games were zoned region 1 or world. So I guess you just got to look for world otherwise. Because there's, three regions in a game, isn't it? Like Blu-ray. There's zone 1, zone 2. I've got to learn all this sort of stuff.
You have to learn all this,
But anyway, other than that, it plays Blu-rays, which is really good, and the on-demand stuff, and does firmware updates and all that sort of stuff. LAN connectivity, big thing. So, one company we haven't really spoken about recently is Microsoft. Remember them?
Oh, yeah, who? Microsoft.
Yeah, who?
Did you go to Microsoft while you were overseas?
No.
No?
Drove past them a few times on the 101 as we drove up and down from San Fran to Palo Alto.
Yes.
They've got an office there next to the just down the road from the Space Administration. NASA got a fairly big spot over there where they do stuff. Don't know what sort of stuff they do, but they had a lot of space just secret, in the Bay Area.
Secret squirrel business. NASA.
Oh, squirrels.
NASA's been busy.
We had a dog.
Well,
in
they've had a bit of a change of direction, haven't they? They're not going to the moon anymore, but they are thinking about Mars.
And Space Shuttle landed while you're away.
Oh, yes.
Watched it on NASA TV.
Did you?
Thanks, GD, in the chat room. His mod in the chat room there.
Yeah.
He tweeted a link, I think, for NASA television. We're able to watch the space shuttle. Yeah, squirrels. What? You ran over
remember
a squirrel.
That, remember that? No. Remember that movie Up with the dogs? Squirrel?
Up. Yeah.
All, that's right. So true in the United States. Where I was staying, they had a dog. Squirrel. Dog just rockets out the door and chases the squirrel.
Oh, we did that with our dogs here. We said, possum. Yeah. It's possum. And they take off.
Absolutely.
They're our little native vermin. Yes.
Anyway, as I was saying, Microsoft have released Office 2010, SharePoint 2010 to TechNet. I put my tongue back in.
Yep.
That's what I was trying to say. TechNet.
You nearly said something else very wrong.
No. Yes. It's like 1080... P.
No, don't go there. No, this.
That's progressive scanning.
I still have.
No, I still laugh when I hear that. And that was a few episodes back.
Oh, dear.
And MSDN. So it looks like Office 2010 ain't too far away. I wonder what sort of interesting things we're going to get.
I'm still using Office 2007.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. I think a lot of people
are still using Office 2003, to be perfectly honest.
It's stable and it works. There you go.
Excellent. All right. The ACCC hits telcos on handset fault policies. Australian Consumer Watchdog is in discussions with Telstra and Optus to make sure that their handset warranties cover the entire length of a customer's mobile service contract. How many of you have actually had a phone go faulty because they make your it only lasts a year and you've got a two-year contract?
We learned last week that Graham's got his extended warranty paid up just for any such eventuality.
Yes.
What did that cost you? Is that worth doing?
Well, I thought it was at the time. I can't remember. That was back 18 months ago when I got this phone. So,
okay.
But yeah, it's interesting news that the ACCC are now suggesting that be standard practice.
Standard operating procedure.
The warranty covers the length of the contract, which makes is very sense. Sensible. Oh, absolutely.
Makes sense. In a statement, the ACCC has accused telcos of avoiding their responsibilities by arguing that if a handset fails, it's not part of the service contract, and the consumer is up for the cost of repair or replacement.
Ba-bow.
Consumers who buy mobile telephone as part of their service contract have the right to expect that the handset will last the length of that contract.
We were talking about this, weren't we?
Yeah, last week we had a good discussion.
They were listening
about this.
To you. There you go.
Yeah, they were listening. And so after our last tech talk, now IT News is running with it. That's good. You're protected by consumer law. Don't think for one moment that because a very expensive piece of electronic merchandise has stopped working and you're 2 days outside of the 12-month warranty, that you have to pay for anything. If it's not fit for the purpose for which it's been sold, not of merchantable quality.
Fit for the purpose that it's been sold.
Take it back.
I guess there's a few grey areas about what people do with them. And
but if they're putting you on a 24-month contract, then the phone should be fit to run for 24 months.
Yeah, well, general day-to-day usage. Mm. stick up for him a bit there.
Mm.
But if you open it up and try and jailbreak it and do stuff, it might put a whole new spin of things.
if you drop it in the drink or you run over it with a car or feed it to the cat, then
put jam inside it and then
don't work.
Blow it up. No. That doesn't work.
Or even try to blend it.
Yeah, will it blend?
Will it blend? No. Did you see they've blended the iPad?
Blend tech,
that is the question.
He did cheat.
He did. He had to break it in half to fit it in the blender.
He blended it. Behind.
He couldn't get the iPad in the blender.
I saw some guy lined up and bought one on the first day, and then he smashed it with a big mallet in the street because he wanted to be the first person to destroy an iPad. But
Blendtec blender guy, he blended one, but he couldn't fit it in the blender, so I had to break it in half.
I'm surprised he didn't manufacture a special blender housing just to
take it. Yeah, well, that's a point.
Did it have ice smoke?
Yes, it did.
Oh, it would have been iPad smoke.
Mm.
If you want to see it, where is it? It's willitblend.com, isn't it?
I think it is willitblend.
Just Google it, willitblend.com.
Google will it blend.
Yeah, you can see what we're talking about. The ACMA, whilst we're talking about government policy, customers still don't want telemarketing calls. That's no surprise to anyone, really. About 400,000 mobile and landline numbers listed in the first month of the Do Not Call register have had their place on the list renewed, according to ACMA. I'm one of them. The register was launched in May 2007. Numbers listed on it have been re-registered after 3 years. The Australian Communications Media Authority said that more than 39% of landline phone numbers and almost 43% of mobile phone numbers have been re-registered so far. Did you re-register, Dr. Ron?
I did re-register.
Yeah?
Mm.
It's good. I did it on the website. You just tick the boxes and it says thank you.
Oh, that too. I re-registered for mum and dad as well, I think.
Did you?
That's very nice of you. No, I didn't say that. I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Aren't you?
No, you have to be the owner of the service that you
Who's to know?
Yes.
You helped your mum and dad to re-register.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mum and dad were standing there and I helped them to do it on the website.
That's right. Yeah, that's appropriate.
So if you're out there and you've forgotten all about the ACMA's Do Not Call register and you want to maintain that wonderful, we only get telemarketing calls for people doing surveys or religious organisations or government bodies or
political parties.
Political parties, yeah.
Hang on a minute. They're all the people I don't want calls from anyway.
Well, you just won't get the man ringing up trying to sell you steak knives on a holiday on the weekend and stuff like that. So, and the other thing too, don't put your name and address on those fish and chip shop coupons, you know, the competitions where you wait for your fish and chips. Oh, they're bad. Or if you do, put someone else's email address on there, for God's sake.
But then you'll never win the prize. They'll win the prize.
That's all right. But they'll also... No, they won't. They won't win the prize. They'll just win the telemarketing. Another interesting issue this week, Telco questions TIO complaint count. This is AAPT, in fact. They've questioned the methodology of a report that shows it experienced a sharp rise in customer complaints, referring to the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman's six-month closing report of 2009. So this is our government watchdog. AAPT have gone, hey, we haven't had that many reports. What do you reckon? Is this, the TIO is an independent government run
it is, it's an organisation, yes,
and they would tick the box when it comes in. How can a telco come back and say, oh, we don't think you've had that many complaints?
Mm.
It seems to me to be quite bizarre. But anyway.
So what's the issue? That they're saying that if the TIO's contacted the one complainant three times...
AAPT is saying that we haven't had this many complaints, but it's obviously the fact that people have just given up on AAPT and gone probably straight to the TIO.
Yeah.
To lodge their complaint.
We've sat on hold for 3 hours, we've hung up and...
That's exactly right. And, I just think it's crying wolf a little bit, but in reverse. So, anyway, NBN News, remember that thing? It's good being back in Australia, isn't it?
National Broadband Network.
Didn't have any NBN talk while I was in the United States. But we had filter talk. Ooh.
NBN code.
An anti-Australia filter talk.
Anti-Australian filter talk. Yes, Mr. Conroy, don't filter if you know what's good for you. That's from word from outside of this...
country.
Nation, yes.
Studio. NBN code turned one while you were away.
Did it? And what's it achieved?
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, apparently they've
cabled dug a few holes.
Three houses in Tasmania and one in Brunswick or something. Is that right?
Well done.
It's done well.
So what happens? What are we expecting in the next year? Another couple of houses?
Another couple of houses. Yes.
God, we're cynical in here, aren't we?
Brunswick West, perhaps.
Yeah. Brunswick West.
Who lives there?
Already in Brunswick. Yeah. Is that right?
Conroy lives out there, does he? He's a Melbourne boy, I think. Probably spends
that
more time in Canberra.
We were wondering. It was Brunswick. They said they put some fibre in. Yeah.
They were trialling some technology. Some new technology in Brunswick.
Yeah.
Of all places. Hello to our Brunswick
well, we
listeners.
We speculated on that
you
last time.
To us on the radio.
Why it would be that place of all places, yeah.
The Coalition...
Not that there's anything against Brunswick. Oh,
no,
nice.
No, it's a lovely suburb. Mm. The Coalition has pledged to upgrade old networks. How about this? We've been waiting for a bit of a spin on what's going to come from... Because we've got a federal election in this country, if you didn't know, in November this year. Not to mention a state election, but that's irrelevant when it comes to telecommunications. But the federal government's up for re-election. They've got a few issues on their hands. Health, communications, filtering, just to name a few. The Coalition NBN plan would see it take immediate action to upgrade existing telephone networks while redirecting taxpayers' money to fund network construction in areas of market failure. This is according to Tony Smith, the Shadow Cabinet, Shadow Communications Minister. Smith told delegates of the Comms Day summit in Sydney that it would not release its full broadband policy until closer to the federal election. Oh dear, here we go. Cat and mouse again? But what do you think about that, boys?
I was supposed to have the damn legislation ready for review at the last sitting of Parliament, and they missed it altogether. So there was some speculation, actually, a couple of weeks ago that it was becoming less and less likely that it was going to be introduced in the... When's the next sitting of Parliament? I'm trying to remember now. I'm trying to Google frantically here. I can't find the next date. But no, it's just on hold indefinitely, this legislation.
It's interesting. We've been talking about this for some time, as well as the filtering devices. It's all going to go beyond the next election, so we'll have to wait and see there. I don't know whether there's anything interesting there. Smith said the Coalition did not expect to find a large volume of irrecoverable work performed by the NBN company or its contractors, and confirmed the Coalition would not be taking the approach of tearing up contracts. Well, I guess that's something for it, really, isn't it? But still. Microsoft pulls faulty server patches. Microsoft has taken down a recent security patch for Windows 2000 server. Graham, do you come across too many 2000 servers in your travels these days? I thought they'd be very much done and dusted by now.
Yeah.
I think I pulled my last 2000 server out probably about 2 or 3 years ago.
We're in the process of moving them all from 2003 to 2008 at the moment. So
if you've got a 2000 server and you've been a bit too tight to actually upgrade to any of the newer ones...
Yeah, hey, give us a call and we'll give you a decent server.
There you go.
And don't have to worry about dodgy Microsoft patches for the old one.
Correct. Now,
go Fedora, you good thing.
What?
You replace it with a Fedora system. Is that what you're saying?
No, replace it with a server 2008 system, maybe.
Nah, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Not on the hardware a 2000 system's likely to be running on.
Mm, that's true.
You might want to go Linux.
Yeah, but, you know, decent IBM server these days doesn't cost you too much.
Talking about movies on the chat now. Are we boring them out there?
Oh, they do their own thing. They have their own little show there.
They
that's
do.
Okay.
They do. Someone on the Hello, Smoke TV Salmon, whoever that is.
Hello, Gatters.
We get all types in our chat, don't we?
We come in here once a week to watch the show in the chat room.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's quite interesting.
And just before we do the manic minute anyway, Adobe hits back at Apple over Flash. Now, if anyone who's bought an iPad of recent times or
we'll
even an
they
iPhone,
can't, yes.
Most sites that you go to with Flash, it's just no go, which is really good for website developers such as myself. We get to do two websites. People who just code only in Flash, well, you want to be looking at a different skill very shortly, I would imagine. Because iPhones are everywhere. iPads will definitely be very much everywhere in the not-too-distant future. So, Flash, this is the way Steve Jobs is going to kill a company, I reckon. So, but anyway, Adobe's going to hit back. The principal product manager for Adobe Flash Development Relations has hit back at Apple for its restrictive Flash practice and said he's now focusing his efforts on developing for the Android platform.
Yay. Mm.
Mike Chambers lamented Apple's decision to distance itself from the Flash application, most recently on its iPad tablet device. And don't remember that great little outburst that Mr. Jobs made to an employee at an employee thing about Flash and pointing fingers and stuff like that. That was quite a rebellious... He really has it in. I should have knocked on the door when I was there and asked him about Flash. That would have been really quite cute, wouldn't it?
What does it do if you try and go to a site that's
just
got Flash?
It gives you that Lego block.
Oh, yeah, saying, please download the plugin.
Yeah.
Is someone going to write a plugin?
I don't know.
Well, no, because the App Store will never approve it.
That's true.
But for jailbroken devices.
What Adobe were doing, though, was that they were writing into their Flash developer tools ways of coding your site so that they would work on an Apple device, on an iPhone or an iPad. But they've pulled that all together, which is part of this story.
Mm.
Another naive question. What's stopping somebody from writing a plugin or something that will render Flash?
What Graham said.
What did Graham say?
That it won't be approved by the iStore.
Okay, I understand that from an Apple point of view, but what about jailbroken devices?
We were chatting last week, though, about the Opera browser, where the Opera system is actually re-encoding the web pages for you. So maybe the Opera browser is a way to go and get them to run the Flash locally on their servers.
I'll bring HTML5 in.
And just push down the HTML5 to your iPad.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is how they've sped up the network on the old iPhone 2Gs.
Or YouTube could just rewrite their site to work with HTML5 directly.
Well, they have.
They have. That's what works.
Oh, good.
Yeah, good. Here's the manic.
Sorry, 30, I'm a bit behind there.
The manic 30 seconds or whatever we were going to try and talk to.
Oh, the mad minutes. Here we go.
Blacklist referrals cost up to $685 to classify.
Blacklist referrals.
Yeah, suspect internet content referred to the Australian Communications and Media Authority costs between $173 and $685 per item to investigate and classify. So if someone says techtalkradio.com.au is a bit dodgy, it's going to cost a taxpayer anywhere from $173 to $685 to classify and put a line in the code, the blacklist code. Figures showed that between the 1st of July 2009 and the end of January this year, total expenditure on classification fees relating to online content investigations had now topped $131,590. Thank you. There you go. That's how we're spending our taxpayers' money. Google services blocked in 25 countries.
Yay.
Soon to be in Australia. Google has revealed a global trend of internet censorship by admitting that many of its products, such as Docs, Blogger, and YouTube, are blocked in 25 of the 100 countries where it operates.
Soon to be 26.
Soon to be 26.
Yay.
There you go, Conroy.
Yay.
Okay. Apple seeks return of its lost iPhone prototype. Oh. Sorry. Did I tell you I've got that in my baggage? I was going to bring it in.
Were you the one? One. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you pop into these pubs in Palo Alto, it's pretty easy to leave stuff floating around the place.
The iPhone, what's being known as 4G or the iPhone HD. Yeah. All these working names for
and
it.
And there's a parallel story to this. Apparently, Steve Wozniak, who was the other co-founder.
He lives in Los Gatos, which is a fair way out. He's a bit down the road from everybody else.
He would be these days. But yeah. He was shown an iPad by an Apple employee the night of the launch, and that Apple employee, as a result, has now been sacked. The interesting thing is still an employee of Apple.
He's got number one. Yeah. He's still card holder or business. What are you, your ID, staff ID
card?
Yeah,
staff ID number one.
He's number one still.
But nevertheless, the staffer got sacked for showing another employee something that he wasn't supposed to show people.
And Gadget said to Apple, go easy on the fella.
Mm.
But no, they didn't. Andrew, next.
Google drops http://... from Chrome.
So you just type in the web address.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
When it displays the address.
Software developer Google has made changes to the developer version of its browser Chrome, which seems to have ruffled a few feathers and probably a few panel members over here, because I know there's a big issue about WWWs. But anyway, http://... is now gone from the beginning of web addresses, putting in its place a pretty blue earth icon.
Oh,
try
nice.
It.
Hey, did you know Google have also bought some hardware manufacturing companies?
No, do tell.
They've bought Agnilux, which was the offshoot of PA Semi. Now, for those of you who haven't followed, PA Semi was a chip manufacturer that Apple purchased some time ago that make the chips inside the iPad.
Okay.
So the offshoot of PA Semi, this Agnilux, has just been purchased by Google. And so there's some thought that Google are going to start building their own servers, their own chips, and maybe even their own tablet.
Wow. That's good gossip. Last two rumours before we go to Oddspot, Gadget and Website of the Week. Optus reveals an insight into mobile phone broadband users, which we might talk about next week. And Office 2010 is going to be cheaper than predecessor. There you go. Two headlines. Watch this space. Meanwhile, Dr. Ron, we'll hand it over to you after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffering succotash, this has to be the best technology show on the internet, Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra have dropped the price of their prepaid broadband data too.
Buckle yourself in, hold on to your hemorrhoids.
Play from Skype. The Skype you have when you're not having a Skype.
It's a real problem. It's a real problem.
Install Fring. Fring's great. Fring.
Now, if that's not a red rag to a bull in a china shop.
It's in the cradle and it's all plugged in, that's fine.
Because I can stick things in its bottom.
Yeah, but
whilst it's in the cradle.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Did you say gridiron cross-country wrestling or something?
Yeah, well, I don't know what that would... Yeah.
From
listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Good to be talking about LED television tonight, Andrew. This week's OLED gadget, the Samsung Series 7000. Australians can now buy 3D television sets. Samsung last week launched its new lineup of TVs, including the Series 7 LED TV, available in stores from the 19th of April. It will cost to just short of $2,900 for the 40-inch set.
Hang on, is this an LED TV? Is this an OLED TV? Is this just an LCD TV with an LED backlight, isn't it?
No, it's an LED 3D TV.
Not OLED. You're right.
It's an LCD TV with an LED backlight.
Is that what it is?
It's marketing confusion.
Correct.
Really?
Design. Yeah, it's not OLED.
Yeah, it's not an LED TV.
So LCD technology with a LED backlight.
That's what they're producing, and they're calling it an LED TV.
They're trying to ride the new technology phrase.
Make it sound like the new technology when it's not.
When it's not. There you go.
It's 3D.
But it's 3D. It'll cost $2,900 for the 40-inch set, which includes two sets of 3D glasses.
The passive or active.
They
look active on the ad that I saw.
Yeah, active.
The 46-inch set
passive if you can
will cost $3,700, and the 55-inch set will cost $4,800. Additional glasses will cost $129 a pair for a rechargeable model, and $99 a pair for a battery-powered option. While its 3D features that are most likely to grab consumers' attention, it has a Skype facility with a camera in the television.
What happens when your battery goes flat?
Do you go cross-eyed? The viewer can pause whatever they're watching in order to take a Skype call. If the person on the other end is also Skype-enabled, in theory, callers can enjoy the sight of each other on their respective couches.
In 3D?
In 3D. If nothing else, the technology
could open up a new version of sexting, couldn't it?
The technology should improve personal hygiene standards and dress codes.
Don't believe it.
Gadget of the Week, the Samsung Series 7000, what it calls the LED TV.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
I mentioned this in the news this week, google.com/government requests. Like other technology and communications companies, Google regularly receives from government agencies around the world and law enforcement agencies to remove content from services or to provide personal information about users of Google services and products. This map is an interactive map, and it shows the number of requests that Google has received in the 6 months between July the 1st and December the 31st, 2009. We know these numbers are imperfect, says Google, and may not provide a complete picture of government requests, but it's up there at least. So that's a reference, sort of ties back to what I was talking about in the news.
I had a quick look when you sent out that on Twitter or whatever.
Like
Australia had 17.
That's all, from either the government or from law enforcement agencies.
Whereas other countries had hundreds and hundreds of
requests for information.
Yeah. It's not many, really, is it?
No.
In the scheme of things.
I think Australia was number 10 in the top 10 of countries that requested such information from Google. But have a look at that. It's an interesting map that they've put up there. www.google.com/government requests.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks, GD, for this Odd Spot this week. Professor Stephen Hawking has warned that while aliens almost certainly exist, humans should avoid making contact.
I saw this.
In a series for the Discovery Channel, the renowned astrophysicist said it was perfectly rational to assume intelligent life exists elsewhere, but he warned that aliens might simply raid Earth for resources, then move on. Professor Hawking said that if aliens...
Stop smoking the weed.
...visit us...
I think he's been watching too much V on television.
...the outcome would be much as when Columbus landed in America, which didn't turn out well for the Native Americans, unquote. Professor Hawking thinks that rather than actively trying to communicate with extraterrestrials, humans should do everything possible to avoid contact.
In other words, keep your head down, son.
Well, from the first sponsors we've received so far, it looks like the aliens are doing exactly that.
I think you've hit the nail right on the head, JD. That's our Odd Spot and website and gadget, Andrew. Good
and
to
that's
have
our
you back.
Thank you. That's our show for the week. Until next week, it's bye for now. Thanks for joining us. Come and visit us on the website and all the other forums. Don't forget to download your podcast, and we'll be back the same time, same station next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McCollum, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop and Graham Callaghan. Expert opinion is provided by Adam Turner, and our US correspondents are Lydia Davis and Mark Diggins. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is proudly sponsored by D-Link. The show is broadcast, recorded and streamed live each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wishes to thank all the stations around Australia that rebroadcast Tech Talk Radio each week. Tech Talk Radio is also available for syndication on your local radio station. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.